Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we come down the mountain with two stone tablets. I really want to invoke a Charlton Heston vibe tonight, Cole.
Charlton Heston. That was like James Mason.
It was James Mason doing Charlton Heston.
Hey, weren't you in the Ten Commandments? Oh my God, I'm James Mason.
What
the hell was that?
That everybody. Here's my theory on this. Before we get started on the show, I have a theory. I was thinking about this today because I was thinking about my Charlton Heston impression, and I was doing it, but I was also doing a Sean Connery doing Charlton Heston.
And both just brought James Mason to the party.
So. Both are really shitty impressions. Granted, like my Sean Connery is shitty, and then my Charlton Heston is shitty, and then you can put them together, they're awful.
That's sort of a Reese's peanut butter cup of shitty. Though.
It is. You've got to have at least three solid crap impressions, like to do as a base to build upon. So I've got my awful Bela Lugosi impression. My awful
That's
Sean
right.
Connery.
We heard that one.
Yeah, my awful.
And it was
Sean,
awful.
It's bad. It's so bad. My awful Sean Connery impression, which if you listen to the USG's the James Bond episodes, you can hear that. I've been trying to develop a third, and I don't know what it's going to be. I do a really bad Nick Cage impression, so maybe that'll be my third base. And then you just got to build upon those. So you know,
it's important to have a supply. Of just really bad impressions.
It really is.
That you can fall back on.
Like vaguely recognizable. Like
hey,
not
like
even.
Like a low rent Frank Gorshin or something.
Not even low rent Frank Gorshin. Like just awful. Just horrible. All right. So we're here at Hey Kids Comics now that we've.
Home of the low rent Frank Gorshin.
Right. Now that we've covered all of that, we are going to do for you a new story arc starting now, running five issues as usual. I'm sorry in advance to Cole and to myself for the seven deadlies.
Yes, indeed. The thing about it is, I think that this is one of those arcs that you know we've had two episodes between arcs, and usually we'll do like 17 episodes, and we'll finally go. Dedicate ourselves to an arc, and the last couple we've just been hell bent to get to.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about, but they've come out well. They've come
absolutely.
Out well,
there were ones that we just were quite anxious to be a part of, even though we're a part of all of the shows.
Right. And again, for those of you that are listening for the first time, I'm Andrew Farmer, and that's Cole Houston. He's been here the whole time. What did I say last week? You were the second set of footprints in the sand for this show.
That's right. The great big ones that completely obscure the first set.
That's right.
And I'm just tramping in there behind them.
He's actually giving me a piggyback ride the entire time.
That's true. That's why they're heavy footfalls.
And he's Luke Skywalker and I'm Yoda. Just the whole time, I'm just in his ear whispering nonsense.
That's the only thing I respond to.
So let me explain the way we do story arcs. We get an idea, and the idea, usually to quote Top Gun, our mouths write checks our bodies can't cash. So we start in with the greatest of intentions. We say things like, these are going to be the most fantastic story arcs in the world. We're going to knock it out of the park.
Well, if you've heard the arcs, you see what you get.
Right. So what happens is we start out, we got issue one, which is where we find ourselves now. And we are gung-ho. We are ready to
go.
We are slamming it out. Issue two, we've got to kind of find our center. We've scraped the bottom of the barrel of our energy. So we've got to reconnoiter. We got to pull together and make that show great. And by issue three, we really feel like we've hit the climax of the story arc. Now, granted, there are five issues in a story arc. So issue three, we hit the top of the mountain. We are at the top. And then we realize we are
hanging delicately on a precipice of our own making.
And then we realize we have five more. We have two more issues to go in a five-issue story arc. So,
and that's usually mid-episode on that third one.
Right.
It all starts to set in.
Look, we really have to go lick our wounds on the fourth one and come out swinging on the fifth one like a final still shot in a Rocky movie with him and Apollo Creed hitting each other
in
the face. That's what we're aiming for.
I equate it to being more like the end of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. You know, we know it's over, so we're just going to go out swinging.
If you ever hear us say, I'll be Louise this time, you know what we're talking about as the car drives off the cliff with Brad Pitt somewhere around. So.
I thought it was my turn.
It might be your turn. I think I did it last arc. I was there at the end of last arc.
You were saying something about best intentions?
Yes.
That was my really crappy Mace Windu impression.
You didn't sound at all like Mace Windu.
That's right.
See, there's my third one. I have a really crappy Samuel L. Jackson impression. So we're doing a story arc on the seven deadly sins as they apply to comic books. And this is another one of our more cerebral story arcs. We gave ourselves a softball this first issue. And we said we're going to do Wrath.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Wrath is kind of a gimme, so we went ahead and led with that, because there is also that little bit of exposition where we kill a good 10 to 47 minutes.
Right.
Just kidding, setting, depending on how involved the arc is going to be, we will devote up to the entire show just for the setup.
Right. So we're going to talk to you tonight. We come to you first with what's the title of the actual title of this episode, Cole?
This is The Seven Deadlies. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
And I think you can, it's pretty transparent where we're going to go with this. So the idea is, how did the seven deadly sins really apply to comic books? And if you're a listener of the show, then you know we don't often say this issue of this comic, this happens. We kind of look.
And also, if you're a listener of the show, you know we suck at math. However, we have worked out a way to squeeze seven deadlies into five episodes. We are going to be doubling up a couple of times.
Also, if you're a listener to this show, I'm sorry. I'm just sorry in general for everything that you've heard, for everything you heard the food episode, for everything you've heard.
Now, the food episode was, it will probably come back to haunt us, but it was nothing short of epic.
That's right.
In its own way. If I may say, delicious.
It was exquisite. So, Wrath.
Let's go, since this is the obvious one, this is the gimme.
Right.
Let's go first with an exploration of the Wrath. This was a character that was invoked not too terribly long ago on an episode where we talked about the character that was sort of the anti-Batman, whose parents were gunned down by police, so he became, as should be painfully obvious to anyone, what do? Naturally become the opposite of Batman, right? You go dress up, and in his case, I think, you know, he was poor and probably a street criminal, so he probably had a low-rent version of the Batcave. No hunchbacks.
No snaggletooth hunchbacks.
No snaggletooth hunchbacks. Not even somebody with a speech impediment or anything. He just had to do it all himself. You know, here was a character who not only embodied a sense of rage and vengeance and wrath, but, you know, took that as his name and then went around slaughtering the good guys. And so, you know, you thought the Joker had a toll on the Gotham Police Department. This guy was...
The funny thing, like, about Wrath is we often think of it as a villain trait. Like, all of these things, it feels like going into it that it would be a super villain or a villain story arc. But that's not necessarily true.
You know, a lot of villains just pop into mind.
Right.
But we do need to explore the fact that there are heroes that embody Wrath.
I would say there are as many heroes as there are villains that do so. But let's stick with Batman while we're at it. And I'm not going to talk, we'll talk more about Batman later, because much like the deconstructing comics thing, I think Batman fits a lot of these. There's very few of these that Batman doesn't in some way, shape, or form embody. Sloth being one of them. I don't think anybody has said, Batman, you lazy. I don't think that's something that's ever been said.
That would be a hard one to pigeonhole him in.
Exactly. While we're on Batman, I really think that Jason Todd, coming back as the Red Hood, really kind of embodies a lot of Wrath. Because his whole thing was, I wouldn't have had died, Ra's al Ghul wouldn't have gotten a hold of me, and I wouldn't have come back via the Lazarus Pit and become crazy if you would just kill the Joker. Why don't you just kill, you know, like, so that was his whole thing. But he was the, you know, much like the Wrath was, he's the evil Batman.
Absolutely. And he's also sort of like if Jerry Van Dyke finally snapped from being second banana.
Yeah.
This is similar sort of story there that thankfully never happened. We'll never need to know.
What happens when Jerry Van Dyke snaps?
That's right. Luckily, he's managed to remain rather placid.
I'm waiting for that special on the ID channel. When
the day Jerry Van Dyke snapped.
Now, here's my thing, and I was thinking about this earlier. I was kicking the ideas around in my head. When you say you won't, you know, the whole, you know, don't make me angry, you won't like me when I'm angry. Are we really considering that wrath? Is that, I understand.
I think really, yeah, that's a good question.
Because it's not acting out of rage. It's acting out of rage, but it's not acting out of a focused, sinful rage.
I think actually what wrath really is, you're rather on the right track, is that wrath is a kind of focused rage, where rage is berserk. It's the Hulk running around just smashing everything in sight.
Right.
Where wrath is more a very determined, very specific, focused kind of rage.
I agree with that. I agree with that. So.
I think a good example. I don't. You almost like again. You fall back on villains so easily. But if you look at the Rhino.
Okay. Yeah.
Very often, you know, he's got to have something going on because he gets invited to join a lot of supervillain groups.
Right.
And I don't think it's solely because they need a brawler.
Yeah, he's angry.
You know, but yeah, when he gets his ire up, and then I think there is a certain rage that builds within him. He's probably furious beyond belief because that suit chafes something fierce. and he's stuck in it. I mean, can you imagine?
You can't get out of that.
He had to go into a life of crime just for the unguents.
Special oils necessary. And lotions that he needs.
I mean, Rajal Gull has the Lazarus Pit, but he's just got like this great big, you know, vat of ponds that he wallows
ponds.
In.
He's got Tiger Balm. He's got a baby pool full of Tiger Balm that he just rolls around in all day when he's not trying to kill Spider-Man.
And that's why Spidey has such a hard time webbing him up. The man is just like a greased pig.
Here's the one that I was thinking about earlier that I can't decide whether it falls into this category or not is Doomsday. And the reason I can't is because he does have a focused rage.
Yeah.
But he's also programmed to have that focus. Can we blame him for that? That's almost like a Terminator level.
I think that he is literally, I mean, if you want to look at something, an entity that embodies rage.
Right.
I mean, there are rageful, wrathful entities, people, superheroes, villains, what have you. This was a creation. This was an artificial entity fabricated in the lab and deliberately turned into something that, I mean, the Hulk is kind of an embodiment of rage, but this is an embodiment of wrath. This is a very, there's nothing. I mean, the only color Doomsday sees is red.
Red and blue, yeah. It's pretty amazing. I'm trying to think, you know, there's so many to choose from, and they often cross lines into other sins. Loki has his fair share of wrath.
Absolutely.
Because of his just abject hatred of his brother. Now, granted, sometimes they get together and do stuff.
Well, they are siblings. You know, there's the holidays. And whatever the Asgardians have, it's like Thanksgiving.
Right. They call that every day. I've seen how they get down. I've seen that. What about, I don't want to go there yet, but the opposite of the Hulk. What about some scrawny, super scrawny, non-super powerful, you know, heroes or villains that are just full of wrath? Does anybody come to mind there?
I think if you want to get somebody who's like average or above average, but not like, you know, superhuman.
Yeah.
Who embraces their own wrath in a Wrath of Khan-like fever pitch. You need go no further than the tricked out pimp van of one Frank Castle.
Yeah, like, he's definitely got the wrath. Like, he has a bad case of the wrath. The wraths. He that is a focused rage right there. If you wanna, if you really wanna embody a focused rage, that's the one to go with. He's been hell bent for years on one thing.
You sort of see this scenario where it's like, Frank, no amount of killing gangsters and criminals will ever bring your family back. He's like, I'm cool with that.
Right. He's like, and I'm coming to terms.
You're preaching the choir, brother. At this point, just a rush.
I've become healthy with this idea. It's okay. Right. It's okay. But I mean, that's the old thing is, and I think it's been brought up. It's been brought up there. It's been brought up, especially, you know, with Batman, is a lot of the wrathful characters, a lot of characters that are full of wrath, I think are full of wrath because they have nowhere else to turn. They're what's his name? They're Ben Stiller from Mystery Men.
Oh, Mr. Furious. His power comes from his boundless rage.
Right. I just think that they're full of, they're out of options. So the only option that they have at this point is just pure unadulterated wrath. Another good example of wrath was, do you remember Infinite Crisis?
Oh, yeah.
This is wrath spilling over into what possibly could be the worst continuity screw-up ever. And that's when Superboy of Earth Prime gets so angry that he punches through the walls of time.
Yeah, that's true. He actually assaulted the time-space continuum on a physical level.
He was so full of rage.
And beat it into submission.
Right, he was so full of rage that he just whooped the multiverse's ass.
That's right. Yeah, I got to the point where, you know, reality itself said, okay, uncle, it's yours. And then whatever you want. So apparently, when in doubt, just keep punching.
Right.
Because eventually you're going to get through.
I've got that on a t-shirt somewhere. When in doubt, just keep punching.
I think it goes to a kind of, a laugh-in psychology there, which is sock it to me, sock it to me, sock it to me.
Nice. Nicely done. That might be our first laugh-in reference, which would be a shame.
I think that may be the first laugh-in reference ever, anywhere, in all my years of podcasting.
Really? Well, I'm proud to have been here for that.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Rah!
Here's a big one. The Spectre.
Ah.
Whose job, appointed by DC's God, is literally to dole out wrath. Here's a green cape.
Yeah, he is the
white foundation. Go do your job.
he has become the kind of like the front man for wrath.
Right, right. He's appointed and isn't his job essentially to find sinners and take them out? Like, I'm not so
familiar.
Yeah, he's
sort of like an angel of vengeance or...
Yeah, I'm not so familiar with the Spectre that I can really break that down. But I know that he's definitely the angel of vengeance, I believe. Like, he's pretty wrathful. He's got a lot going on there. And there's another, now that I'm thinking about
he's full of wrath.
He's the what?
He's chock full of wrath.
He is wall-to-wall wrath. If it was the 70s, wood paneling would be his wrath.
He's like if you were going to carpet your van, your Punisher van in wrath. He would pretty much just cover it with Spectre.
That's his second job. Is
Oh, really?
Yeah,
custom
vans. Spectre brand custom vans.
Probably reads Cartoons magazine in his spare time.
He's just sitting around waiting for the call to come down about some center. Oh, I could put some ground effects on this minivan and put a pull-down couch in there. That'd be great. He's like the exhibit of DC, but he's also an angel of wrath.
And also one of those little formed little windows, you know, that's shaped like a heart or something.
Right, with a
teardrop.
I don't think that the wizard painted on the side of your van carries as much weight in the DC universe as it does in ours.
Probably not. Now, in the Marvel Universe, if the wizard painted on the side of your van is the wizard,
right,
a.k.a. the wingless wizard,
then it's,
you might have something there. In fact, the van of the Fearsome Five has his portrait.
I was going to say, if you see a van with the wingless wizard painted on the side, chances are it's the wizard's van.
Yeah, just... I would go ahead and get out of the area for a while.
You know who else has a lot of wrath and no superpowers? Pretty much anybody who's ever fought Iron Man. There's a lot that goes into an Iron Man villain, and I think that it's pretty much... And you know what? I could make an argument that later in the story arc that Sloth is one of them. But you've got to be pretty focused and angry to put all of your time and resources into making a comparable suit of battle armor for the sole purpose of trying to take out Iron Man.
Yeah, especially if you have no other... You know, you're not going to, like, later in the day dig post holes for your wife. So you can finally put up that damn fence I've been bugging you about. What?
Poor Obadiah Stane. You know that's why he was so angry.
That's exactly how he got started. It wasn't really the Stark rivalry so much as just getting out of the damn house.
Right. Like, I'm going to go in the garage. I'm going to turn on the shop vac.
Yeah, because Marguerite Stane just drove
Marguerite Stane. Marguerite Stane. I really wish I could pull that up and it be real.
I know. I'm wondering if anybody's going to go on Wikipedia and check and see what Obadiah's wife's name was. It just Marguerite seemed like a good fit. So
quick, Marvel, if you're listening, Wikipedia.
That's right. Yeah, somebody go on to Wikipedia for me and just say that on the Obadiah Stane page and say that he was married to Marguerite Stane.
Once Dr. Light got his brain unlocked from Zatanna magic, there was some wrath there.
There was a lot of wrath there. And with good reason. I mean, if there was ever potentially justifiable...
Right. Wrath from a...
Wrath. I think that was it. Because, you know, he was violated.
He was. I agree. No, I agree with that statement. He certainly was violated. So...
I mean, if nothing else, there would have to be some damages paid or something, but...
So why don't
my
we...
biggest concern there is in the civil case that Zatanna would just magic everybody up when they...
I'd like to introduce you to Manhunter and Zatanna, attorneys at law.
Yeah, it's like, how do you say acquit backwards? And it's done. Her father taught her well. I'm just saying.
She comes by it honestly.
Yeah, dad knew his stuff.
Talk to me about Watchmen. Talk to me about Wrath and Watchmen.
Wow, Wrath and Watchmen.
Because the thing about Watchmen is when you read it, and Alan Moore's brilliant, and his layers are amazing.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the layers of the book, and I don't know if you've ever looked at this, and I was thinking about this, there. I think that a lot of the...
Isn't this the title that you roll your eyes whenever I bring it up?
It
or
is.
Or am I thinking of Master of Kung Fu?
Well... Six of
or
one.
Both.
Six of one. But it is, but it's only I roll my eyes at you when we're talking about hot dogs. And then you're like, in Watchmen? I'm like, damn it. this is poignant and real. I think that Alan Moore worked the sins.
So suddenly I have to show relevance?
Yes, you do. You have to defend the last six issues of you talking about the hangman's costume choice with some real shit now. It's real talk time. You can't... The molding work around the mirror that Laurie was looking in when...
Very popular filigree. In
yeah, thing. There we go. Filigree. I think Alan Moore worked the seven deadly sins into The Watchmen. I think if you
I
look...
I think we can make a very good case for that happening.
Right. So where does Wrath fall into Watchmen?
Wrath's initially, I mean, the obvious one, anyone who is familiar or has read it 110 times like I have, or even if they haven't, when you're hearing this, you're thinking, oh, you're immediately going to zero in on Rorschach.
Because there is,
and I think in a lot of ways, the Rorschach persona, which is the one that Jacoby is most comfortable as, because Jacoby is a nobody.
Right.
He's nothing, but there's a purpose, there's a reason for Rorschach to exist. You certainly see the earmarks of Wrath. You see all of the prerequisites of Wrath are there within that persona. But I would say that if you really want to see Wrath in action, you look at Edward Blake in his youth.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that while he was a crime fighter as the comedian and later a soldier...
Uh-huh.
There is a lot more there. I think those were almost, if you will, happy accidents.
There's a socio pathology to the character.
Otherwise, you would have had a very dangerous criminal on your hands.
Yeah, if he wouldn't have been turned or found, discovered, and turned, and then made a weapon, essentially. Because that's what he is.
Yes.
He isn't.
It's like Machete Kills. The comedian kills. That's what he does.
Like, the Punisher is a man with a pathology towards revenge. That's what he is. I look at the comedian more as a weapon. Not a man with a pathology, but a weapon that happens to be a man with a pathology. Started as a weapon. And that's what he's always been. It's just whoever is holding that weapon is the one that gets
exactly.
to fire it.
I think, you know, for a while there, the Minutemen were able to utilize that weapon.
Right.
But it was a dangerous weapon. You never knew when it was going to go off. But an important one. So you kept it around. It was like Grandpa's old shotgun. Because when you really need it, it's nice to know it's there, but it's best never to touch it.
Right. It's
unless, you know, except against the contingency of home invasion or zombies. Because it's just as likely to harm you as it is to be an effective weapon. So, you know, I think that's one of those things where you might miss that deadly sin embodied because of the more obvious.
Right. And I don't view Rorschach as having wrath. Like
wrath is very much a part of the psyche of Rorschach, because it is wrath that it was in a fire of wrath that Rorschach was born.
That's true. That part is absolutely
by his own admission. Jacoby said that it was just Jacoby pretending to be Rorschach up to the point that he investigated that kidnapping.
Right. Right. No, that's it. Before, and it's that Batman idea that we always talk about, is which alter ego is which. And the really interesting thing about Alan Moore and what makes him so brilliant is you actually get to see that alter ego switch, or at least be told about the alter ego switching, you know,
and absolutely. And the other thing that's fascinating, since we're taking this approach, is something that just occurred to me by looking at Watchmen in this way and analyzing it in this way, deconstructing, if you will.
Right.
It can be argued that any individual can and perhaps will exhibit the seven deadly sins at some point.
Right.
We're all capable. The capacity to exhibit all seven of these sins is there. That's why they were identified in the Antediluvian or whenever that.
When Charlton Heston
You know, when we were first working on this arc, or first conceiving of it, I went to look up what the seven deadlies were, so we'd get that part right, you know, the names and all.
Yeah.
And I actually remember reading, obviously very vaguely, where that whole concept was first put forward.
Okay.
And I've forgotten, and I refused to go look it up. But, you know, part of that was identifying these are the things that we are all capable of and must guard against. Otherwise, you're a teenage boy who gets kidnapped in the subway by some creepy old guy with a beard and shown the hall of giant flaming statues of all of them.
Right.
Granted, at the end of it all, you don't get molested and you get some really cool superpowers and get turned into an adult. And if you weren't such a goody two-shoes, you'd probably pick up some chicks like Nutty Professor. I'm talking about the Eddie Murphy one. Yeah, I'm all over the place on this one.
You really are bouncing a lot. But that's okay.
I do that solely to set up, to be completely ridiculous, to set a very serious point, that if you argue that the core concept behind the seven deadly sins is that we all have that capacity.
Yes.
Then you see, I think we may find, this is just occurring to me, so I'm not going to try to flesh this out just yet.
All right, so we got an inference coming.
I think we may find in Night Owl most, if not all of them.
Okay. Well, let's start with Wrath as far as Night Owl, and then we'll make sure five.
We'll try to see if they fit as we go along. But this one does fit, because when Night Owl gets wind of what's happened to his mentor,
okay,
he exhibits the full spectrum of rage and wrath.
Yes, I agree with that.
And exacts it.
Yeah, he does not hold back.
This hapless not top, he wasn't even involved. He was just a random not top. So, you know, he becomes the focus, the embodiment, the representation.
Right.
And that's enough. you know, he is, it's almost like being a an effigy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Albeit a flesh and blood effigy that feels a lot of, a tremendous amount of pain.
But takes on the role of all Knot Tops.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So let's revisit Night Owl, each of these seven deadly sins, and see if he fits.
We'll let Night Owl kind of creep into each of these and be a part of them. We'll see if they fit him or not.
See if he's a, see if Alan Moore, see if we can figure out whether Alan Moore meant him to be a cipher for all the sins. Because Alan Moore does a really good job of being a populist with his characters and really making them embody the human condition.
So what's ironic is a couple of weeks ago, I was at a convention, was talking to one of the dealers about Watchmen.
No.
And yeah, imagine that. And talked rather at length about the fact, and hopefully as a result of getting our postcard, he's tuning in the show. So if you're listening, hey, here we are. I was mentioning, you know, how many, I've read this thing over and over many times a year. I'll pick it up and reread it. And I always discover something I never noticed before.
Right.
And here is an example of me discovering something I never noticed before without benefit of reading it.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, well, it's ingrained. It's written on the plates of your brain.
That's true. It's actually reprinted on the interior of my eyelids. Every time I blink, I get to
prehistoric handprints on the walls of your French cave might be the dirtiest thing I've ever said on this show right there.
We'll see that soon on Urban Dictionary.
Right.
For that.
I want to, before we get into the one that I really want to talk about, I do want to talk about Moon Knight. Shockingly, if you get to talk about Watchmen, I get to talk about Moon Knight. That's the rule.
You brought up Watchmen.
I did. And aren't you glad I did? Aren't you glad? I like to let you get out in the yard and play every once in a while. Moon Knight's one of those characters that, if you read enough of it, when he's in his Mark Spector persona, he's not particularly... I mean, keep in mind, he is the avatar of the Egyptian god of vengeance. You don't really get any more wrathful than that. You're pretty much carrying your wrath card with you at all times.
Oh, absolutely. And it's kind of like Spectre. Once you got the job...
Right. And then...
It's not just a job description. It's a personal description.
But yeah, it's your personal mission. It's not a job description. It's who you are. But when he actually puts on the costume, that's when he becomes this avatar of rage and wrath and retribution. So as a normal everyday dude, right, there's a difference. Let's say you're Captain America. You know, mustache on or off, you're still Steve Rogers. You're still just a guy looking for a chicken fried steak.
That's right.
If you're Moon Knight, you're Mark Spector for 90% of your day. Then you put on the weird white costume, and all of a sudden, you're full of rage and wrath. Are there any other characters that are like that? Because you can't say Batman's like that. He's always full of wrath.
Yeah, where you're literally like putting on that.
You're,
in a way, you know, that's kind of how Rorschach was. You're literally putting on the rage and wrath character persona.
Yeah, but I mean, if you read
there aren't many I could think of.
If you read his journals, you know, he's got more. He's obviously carrying some with him when he's not in costume. But I think by the end, he's pretty much always in costume.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you get to the if you want to get into like really a wrathful character, you might not think of, because he's made his wrath or kind of allowed himself to be the wrathful spokesman.
Okay.
Sort of like the super villain, the civil rights super villain is Black Manta.
Yeah, I could see that.
Who literally sought to create a kind of utopian, you know, and a better perfect world under the waves.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to, you know, make the world on the surface much any better.
That's true. I was thinking, if you want to talk about somebody who monetizes their wrath, who set out and said, I have a lot of wrath, how do I make money on this? It's Lex Luthor.
That's true. He's definitely, that's actually the eighth habit of highly successful people is wrath.
There are 14 habits of highly successful people. The first seven are the ones you know. The second seven are the deadly sins. That's
okay. Well, there you go.
That's what it is.
So we're just now on the eighth habit.
That's right. We're right behind.
See, there's two things that you now can look at in a whole new perspective. That's Watchmen and the seven.
Yeah, your homework is to go home and associate one of the habits of highly successful people with one of the seven deadly sins.
That's right.
Oh, let's talk about Batman, because I always want to talk about Batman.
Oh, who doesn't?
Fourth meal. So where does Batman stand wrath. On wrath?
I want wrath.
I want wrath.
Wrath hot dogs.
Mild sauce.
The best hot dogs out there, because they're wrath.
And kosher. Where does Batman stand on wrath?
Damn it, Alfred, I didn't want ballpark.
That's where he stands on wrath.
Because
don't you dare bring the man ballpark, Franks.
Because he's one of those guys that is always angry. You know, even when he's Bruce Wayne, he puts up a good front.
Yeah, well, where he stands on wrath is apparently dead center.
He is pH zero when it comes to wrath.
It's like if wrath, you know, if you have the seesaw of wrath, he's the guy who walks to the middle of the seesaw and balances.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's right in the middle. He's not going to go too high, not going to go too low.
He's the fulcrum. He's really the linchpin of wrath. When he's Bruce Wayne, he's not wrathful enough to lose his shit and give up his secret identity. That's why Frank Castle doesn't bother to wear a mask.
Yeah.
There's no way he could control that. And that's why Rorschach never takes his off. At some point, you lose the ability to control your wrathful nature. You're just a beast of your id. And you're just attacking and killing and shooting and mobstering and jumping
right.
around. But Batman is this case study in controlled rage. He will take his war against crime, his war, his revenge story, up to the point where the seesaw starts tipping into homicide and back off.
That's true. And also, I think during the periods where he's forced to take on the mantle of Bruce Wayne and be millionaire, nowadays billionaire, otherwise he really wouldn't matter.
Right.
Philanthropist.
He owns some subway chains.
It's right.
The franchise.
You know, to be the philanthropist, playboy, bon vivant.
Right.
And apparently accident prone as all hell. You know, when he's forced to take on that role, it's almost like Bruce Wayne is potential energy and Batman is kinetic energy.
That's, oh my God, that is a really, really... good metaphor.
Yes, because
holy
all
hell.
Of the wrath that he has to carry around all day at board meetings.
Right.
And, you know, ribbon cuttings at the
Luncheons.
New orphanage.
Yeah.
All of that wrath is just stored.
Right.
And later, when he has to go beat the bejesus out of Two-Face.
He's a wrath battery.
To the point where he's like One-Face.
To the point where he's One-Face. I wish I was One-Face.
That's what he makes use of that downtime.
Right. He's a wrath battery.
Yeah, he's like those people who run in place at the crosswalk waiting for the light to change.
That's brilliant. That is amazing. Like, he hates everything.
Yeah.
He hates the Joker for bringing out the worst in him. He hates Gotham for needing him, you know, like the classic line, you know, one day they're going to look up and ask it, and I'm going to look down and say no. Like, he just hates him. The only people I don't think he hates are Alfred and the Robins, and possibly
yeah.
Gordon.
Which was actually going to be my group I'm starting. It's a teen, it's like Menudo, a little
yeah.
teen group. I'll rotate them out from time to time. It's Alfred and the Robins.
Is that what's going to happen?
That's what's going to happen. There's big money in these boy bands.
Is that where it's at? I can see where it's
That's
big
where the
gold rim
is.
Glasses and have a stogie right now. There's big money in them boy bands.
There's big money in boy bands.
Oh, one of these days we need to do a music episode. Why haven't we done that?
I don't know. I guess
put it on the one shot list. We're gonna do a music episode.
Music, all right.
I'm thinking Dazzler vibe.
Yeah.
I'm sure we can put together.
Oh, and also the Teen Titans. We'll get into that in the music.
Yeah, just save it. We'll get into it.
It'll okay. Yeah, we need to start. We don't need to start recording that
right
now.
Right. God, we're crazy. We're just gonna start doing an episode.
Seven Deadlies has now become a one shot music episode. Near the end. There.
Welcome to Inception, the podcast. It's a podcast within a podcast.
Luckily, I have my handy Hey Kids Comics pen here. I can jot this down while we.
You know who I imagine has to have a lot of wrath, but has to be able to manage it well. And we've talked about this guy quite a bit in the last couple weeks or month and a half. Is Black Bolt?
Wow!
Because can you imagine not being able to the frustration? And I mean, oh, that's the thing, right? If you don't have a healthy outlet as a superhero, it's very easy to bottle up. And like we said with Batman, become a rage battery, become a wrath battery if you don't have a healthy outlet for it. So you see like the Danger Room and Captain America beating the crap out of heavy bags.
Yes, exactly.
Iron Man drinking. Not that it's healthy, but it works.
But it is an outlet.
Right. Night Nurse and Doctor Strange do their, you know, you see all this. Thor and his Asgardian brothers beating the crap out of frost giants, just getting it out, you know. But if you're Black Bolt, you have no healthy outlet. You sit on your throne. You listen to your people come before you and bitch while you're holding court all day. You can't say anything because if you do, everyone dies. And when you finally get to release your rage.
Well, the worst part of it also is as a married man, you know, he's got this pent up rage that just boils within him. And it to the point of almost defiant, you know, being a defining part of who he is. But, and then, you know, at the end of the day, they curl up in bed. Just, do you want to talk about,
you can't.
Oh, yeah.
And if you
then what do you get? More rage.
And if you do lose it, and you you say, and you're just like, shut up, a mountain is gone.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know who else falls into the Moon Knight alter ego rage category in a big way is Daredevil.
Oh.
Because all day long he's in court and he's trying court cases. And then at night, he puts on the Daredevil costume and whoops the crap out of whoever.
Yeah, I mean, he's out there wailing on Gladiator. He's like, I'll show you relevant.
I'll show you relevant. Ghost Rider's another one that's similar to that, I think.
Well, yeah, Ghost Rider, then, there you're falling into the whole, he is a spirit of vengeance.
Right. It's much like Moon Knight
or that other one.
Spectre? We're going for Spectre.
Yeah, the Spectre.
There you go.
So then at that point, you really don't have, you can't do anything else.
Right. I wonder if they have a support group.
Sit around.
I wanted an ice cream cone, but instead, I made somebody stare into my eyes and see the pits of hell, and they're catatonic now. It's not the same. It's not the same.
I'll tell you, somebody who's kind of driven a lot by wrath and to the point that it drove him completely insane and still drove him even beyond the grave was Anton Arcane.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Let's bring it back to Alan Moore here.
Yeah. I mean, Alan Moore took a character that was already crazy with jealous rage and righteous indignation and anything else in the catalog. Because the man could afford it.
What do you get the man who has everything? More rage.
Rage. Rage. when his rage was no longer enough, then he becomes like weird psycho archaic, mystical cyborg spider creature.
Yes, he does.
He becomes like the Darth Vader of
weird super
of the DC, yeah, the Vertigo with his, he's more machine than man, he's like machine demon.
All he wanted was a little kale.
Who? Yeah, that, you know.
I mean, really, it's Swamp Thing's fault.
He was kale intolerant. That was the problem. And then after Swamp Thing came along, he was even more kale intolerant.
He just needed some fiber in his diet.
He went from physically to literally kale intolerant.
I'm glad you brought Anton Arcane into this. Because
yeah, I mean, once Alan Moore got a hold of him, he comes back from beyond the grave to further enact rage.
Because here's the thing. We talked about early on how a lot of these cross-pollinate, much like we were discussing when we talked about deconstructing comics. And you've got a jealous rage in characters like Anton Arcane and in characters like Norman Osborn.
Yes, in fact, Green Goblin was amongst my mental list, because every show I'll have these things that'll pop in my head, and a good quarter, you know, anywhere between 15% and 25% of them disappear
before the Alchemist. Doctor Doom is another one that has a lot of, I would consider it jealous rage, and it's not jealousy over an object or it's jealousy over intellect. You know?
Absolutely. And I don't know really the backstory. Was he heir to the Latverian throne, or was he simply, did he go home and take over after he got out of big school?
I'm pretty sure he went home and just took it.
Yeah.
Because wasn't he was Reed's roommate.
Yeah. And, you know, they could have afforded to have him brought in professors and things from Europe.
Exactly. But I think Doom just went back and took it. Don't quote me on that, but I believe...
Yeah, I'm not really clear on who ruled in Latveria before he decided to take over.
But there's a big motivator there as far as the
villains.
Obviously,
Johnny Glassjaw was...
You know who has... You want to talk... Oh, here we go. This is what we'll end it on, because we're getting close again. We managed...
I had a feeling. I was actually prepared for once.
You're starting to be able to sense the time. We have no time. See, my Nick Cage impression is dead on.
Hey, oh, ow.
Yeah. Help, I'm trapped in a painting. I want to talk a little bit about your favorite and my favorite, Amphibious Invader.
No.
Namor.
Wow. Yes. How could we not?
Right. I mean,
talk about the scion of Atlantis.
The angriest man with winged feet that you can possibly imagine. Namor, he has every level, every kind of rage, he has it. Like, if you could just give me a, you know, chocolate-covered rage, Fiesta Taco Spider rage, he has all the rage. He is all the rage.
Yeah, because he's got the jealous rage, he's got the insane rage, he's got the fevered rage. He literally does have it's like the 31 flavors.
He's the Baskin Robbins of rage.
Yes, indeed.
He's got jealous rage at Reed for having Sue. He's got jealous rage at Land. Like, he's the only person I know that actually has rage against a form of matter.
Well, and the thing about it is, there's more of what he's got than what we got.
Right. So stop it. We'll talk about you when we get to our jealousy. Our Erebus issue here, buddy. he's just angry. He's just punching whales, dude. That's not cool. Like, just stop.
Why is he punching whales? He's punching those big land whales with the chubby hands.
Yeah, we're the Monster Island. Just goes out to Monster Island and starts punching whales.
That's why he's got that big horn. The big seashell horn. He blows it, and they're like, oh, my God, he's sending his giant walking whale critters after us. And they're like, no, he just wants to punch it.
I don't even want to get into this, but I'm going to say Acts of Vengeance and then let that go, because never before has a stupider idea been put on the table, including the word stupider, than getting all your supervillain buddies together and decide you're going to attack. You're so mad, and you're so mad that you've run out of ideas. So somebody needs to attack Red Skull, you go after the X-Men because I'm so mad. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, at that point, it was sort of like the comic book version of Throw Mama from the Train. Like, what did he go see? Did he go see that Hitchcock movie? What are you talking about? Crisscross, crisscross. What the hell?
I think it was probably Mandarin's idea to do Strangers on a Train.
Yeah. It probably was.
All right. But,
you know, he was marathoning it one day.
Right. He really kicked around the idea of doing Rear Window, but he couldn't figure out. Yeah. He couldn't figure out how to get Professor X in that room.
I know. Oh.
Got you again, Professor X. You can't walk, and I made fun of you. All right, we're gonna wrap this up. We've done it. We made it through the first one. How do you feel?
At the traditional fever pitch, no less.
Right. How do you feel? You feel good?
I'm feeling great, especially after, the coming out with, it was like kinetic carnival of comics there for a second for fans of Professor Gerald Walker.
So what's our next issue?
Our next issue escapes me because
I want to
say that our next one is...
I can tell you. I'm actually prepared.
Yeah.
Enough is never enough.
Yes. Which is we jump all over the middle of greed.
Yes. Yes. We will jump right in the middle and take what we want.
That's right. Because by God, we deserve it.
We do. We do. So,
and you do too. Our audience deserve this. It's really for you that we're getting grabby on this one.
That really seemed like a threat. You deserve this.
That's right.
You had this coming. I see the way you listen.
Much Batman on your mind right now. How do you like that? How do you like them apples, One Face?
One day my audience is going to look at me and say, will you do a cogent show? And I'm going to look back at them and say, no.
I'll look back and say, no, because that's not what you really want. Eddie Medina.
Eddie Medina is a dog chasing cars when it comes to these shows. If we did a poignant, like lyrical... masterpiece of a show. He would lose our biggest fan. Yeah. He'd be like, I'm done with this shit. It's like, I don't even want to listen to this anymore. It made sense. It was linear. Like, this is crap. So
Cole did not make one reference to something that shouldn't be remotely related.
Right. It seemed like he was working up to a DC Cab reference, and then and then he just referenced Superman 2, which was, in fact, a proper reference for what he was talking about.
Yeah,
I give up on this show. I'm done with this.
I was half expecting, at least some mention of Every Which Way But Loose.
I totally thought we were getting a Toys reference.
Wow.
But instead, we got a Brewster's Millions reference when we were talking about Lex Luthor. Yeah. Yeah, that's called the prior whammy, is that what I just gave you there.
I think you were thinking of that I was saying Stir Crazy.
I don't even care. I just wanted to talk about Richard Pryor for a second.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's called Double Jeopardy.
No, it's called Another You.
Oh.
Yeah, I went
there. Oh, man. All right, why don't you plug us up?
All right, let's plug our way out of here. Of course, listening to this through the auspices of the Jedi Cole Universe, home of, amongst other things, the Eddie Medina vehicle that is the Rancor Pit. Also home to What'd You Think from time to time with Mrs. Jedi Cole and the unmountable, unbreakable, unsinkable, and untraceable Bobby Blakey.
By the way, I really love the fact that you plugged that show as saying, what'd you think from time to time? That was brilliant.
Really, that it has, like many shows early into the history of this network, no real set schedule.
But it just seemed like you were going like, nah, sometimes you think about stuff.
You know, sometimes you feel like a show, sometimes you don't.
That's right. Almond Joys have shows. Mounts don't. So all of those things being said,
you can find all that and more at JediCole.com. And of course, if you're keen on conventions and you're keen on Texas and you'd like to combine the two for your convention going pleasure, visit the Convention Awareness Project Texas at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.org. You can find Andrew, myself, Mrs. Jelly Cole, the irrepressible Rick Gutierrez, and other friends at United States of Geekdom at unitedstatesofgeekdom.com. And coming soon, yes, by the time this airs, it will still be coming soon, another new show on the Jedi Cole universe, because we just really can't get enough. And you'd almost think I like hearing the sound of my own voice, which I swear to God I don't. It's SB, I'm sorry, did that backward, edit point, BS with SB, which is just a casual, meaningless conversation between myself and the incredible elder statesman of Australia, Mr. Stuart Ball.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic. All right, so join us next week when we discuss what's mine, and you can't have it. It's mine,
yeah?
Cole.
What
it's mine, Cole.
It?
You, well, then we're going to have to invoke some...
This may be your show, but it's my network.
It's maybe your network, but it's my internet. I don't know. I lost it. I had it, and I lost it. It was there, now it's gone. All right. We'll see you guys in a week. Thank you for listening so much. As always, buy, collect, and enjoy comics. And if you can't enjoy them, find yourself full of wrath.
And just get angry.
Just get angry. All right. Good night, guys.